No, my belief was that the economic sanctions clearly strengthened him. In the spring of 2005, I anticipate a real news launch offensive saying that the United Nations was criminal and that they looked the other way while Saddam was raking off funds from the oil for food deal. Well, yeah, the UN people looked the other way, the US looked the other way, everybody looked the other way, everybody knew the extent of smuggling that was going across the Turkish border. There was a huge infrastructure to support that smuggling with the Jordanians. Plenty was being smuggled out. Saddam was making people pay surcharges. Everybody knew the corruption. But were people then to say to the children who at least could get the ration basket under the Oil for Food program, we're going to jeopardize that because we don't want to look the other way anymore? The United States, in imposing those severe, comprehensive economic sanctions against Iraq, were imposing sanctions on people under dictatorship who there was nothing they could do under that kind of strapped situation, where they couldn't place a phone call outside the country, they couldn't get postal mail, they couldn't keep up with the outside world, they could barely keep up with their relatives in any fashion. Saddam didn't miss a meal, and yet the United States was basically saying, if you don't, you, ordinary people, with one out of every seven person in your midst working for the Secret Service, if you don't, even in spite of those fearful conditions, force your government to do everything we tell it to do, we'll kill your children. That was the deal. And okay, maybe you could somehow imagine a group of people imposing that for a year and see what happens. But then it became clear that it wasn't working, that Saddam was getting stronger, that he was getting financially stronger because of the smuggling, that he had even greater repression over his country. He was strengthened internally, crippled externally. But then it went on for another year and another year. 13 years of tightening the thumbscrews while the children's dead bodies were piling up in child sacrifice, the most egregious instance of child abuse on the planet. And this was considered a solution? I mean, now they're doing it again. They're saying to people in Fallujah, you either cough up Zarqawi or we're going to bomb your houses systematically street by street. We don't know if that man or his followers are living in there. There's not concrete evidence. But that's the only way right now that the United States can see a way forward, with Alawi being called Saddam without the mustache, the new one that they've picked to be their strong arm. Were there alternatives to economic sanctions? Yes, we could have lifted those economic sanctions, extended a hand of friendship to people in dire need, helped them to regain at least enough of a measure of prosperity that there'd be some identifiable middle class, and that's what you need to throw the bums out. It worked in Iran. And I'm not going to advocate killing anyone. I'm a pacifist, and you can't be a vegetarian between meals, and you can't be a pacifist between wars. You've got to be a pacifist every day of the week. So I don't like it that in Romania they hung Ceausescu. But they did get him out of their own with no help from the United States or Russia or anyone else. And with the Iranian revolution that ousted the Shah, as things go, it wasn't bloodless, but as things go, it was relatively nonviolent, and it was happening when the United States supported the Shah. So I think it is possible for a group of people to manage on their own, but if you cripple them with economic sanctions, isn't it a little bit like cutting somebody off at the knees and then saying, okay, run. Hey, you didn't run. And then you really whap it to them. I mean, the cruelty of these policies. I mean, isn't it as though we said, okay, look, we had to starve you so we could stop bombing you after 1991. And then, in 2003, we had to bomb you so we could stop starving you. Well, what kind of a cruel and bullying policy is this? And yet, you know, my mother will, in all honesty, look at me and say that the Iraqi people should be grateful. I mean, she has the most amazing ability to combine Irish charm, mother wit, and Fox News. Who needs fascism when you've got Foxism? And it's not only Fox News, because do you know the joint, joint group of retired military and diplomatic people numbering 27 on June 16th got together and they issued a statement roundly criticizing, condemning the Bush administration for placing foreign policy on the basis of a doctrine of preventive war. And that's a very, very dangerous thing that they've done. The New York Times, the paper of record, gave not one word of coverage to the press conference, to the statement, just eclipsed it. In Boston, Senator Kennedy, and here in California, Feinstein, she's yours, isn't she? Yeah. They together had developed legislation they tried to pass that would ban a repeal on the development of mini nukes, micro nukes, and tiny nukes. These are these nuclear bombs that are about 4 feet high. You could put them in a duffel bag. And formerly, further research on these precision, low-yield nuclear weapon devices, robust nuclear bunker penetrators that were nuclearized, was prohibited. Feinstein and Kennedy tried to keep it that way. There was a debate in the Senate. This is a debate about whether or not the United States enters back into a nuclear arms race when we are going to be competing with China big time. This was of huge, essential, ultimate importance to every single one of us and every species on the planet. Not one word of coverage in the New York Times, the paper of record. It just went right past us. I think, are in some ways at risk of being a society that would be viewed as a nation of big children. It's almost as though we don't get the chance to make the adult choices. Many of us in this room right now grew up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud, huh? And if we think of the litany of wars since that time, Korea, Vietnam, El Salvador, Guatemala, Grenada, Panama, the first Gulf War, Kosovo, Afghanistan, this most recent war, Colombia. It's hot war after hot war after hot war. It's like brush fires that blaze up and seem to be going out of control, and the peace movement's got to run behind them and try to stamp them out. And undergirding that is, I think, a war of Western culture on the biodiversity of our planet, on Mother Earth. And then along with that, you've got the war of U.S. culture against weaker countries whose resources we want to control and exploit. The common denominator is our culture. And I think the question then becomes, how can we change our culture? And I think the answer is amongst us. It's in what the Jesuit Volunteer Corps young people are doing. It's what the LA Catholic Worker is doing, what the Office of the Americas is doing, what so many of you have been doing, the Open Door community in Atlanta. We have to celebrate that, hope that we can become many more than we are now, and realize that this is the most sane way for younger people to proceed. If anyone would dare say to one of these Jesuit Volunteer Corps members, now isn't it time that you grew up and got a real job? That would be terrible. Horrible. Don't let anyone tell you that. And don't pay those loans. You don't owe the government a penny. Or the Jesuits. Just don't even pay them. Ruined for life. But I mean, I think we've got to start to come to grips with finding a new economy, a new way of living. I'll just say so briefly that I was in a role play some weeks ago where somebody was playing the role of a spouse who came home to tell his wife at Christmas time that next year he had to do it. He was going to lower his salary beneath the taxable income. And the wife blows and is furious. And the husband says, but I just wanted to try to be a peacemaker. And the wife says, at Christmas? I mean, that's where we've come to. Thank you.